Thank you for joining me for today's COVID-19 daily update. I'm pleased to be joined, of course, with Dr. Jose Romero of the Department of Health, Dr. Greg Bledsoe, our Surgeon General, Secretary Johnny Key of the Department of Education will have some remarks as well, and I appreciate them joining me today. And first, let me say we've been blessed first with Dr. Nate Smith, with such a national reputation as our Secretary of Health. And of course, he's gone to the CDC. But we also have been blessed with Dr. Jose Romero, who also has a distinguished national reputation as well for his work with infectious disease. Dr. Romero moved to Arkansas as Director of Pediatric Infectious Disease at UAMS, I believe it was in 2008. He served as past director at Clinical Trials of Research at Arkansas Children's Research Institute from 2008 to 2009. He has been medical director at the Department of Health. And as you know, I've asked Dr. Romero to be the interim secretary of the Department of Health, and I'm pleased to announce today that I have named Dr. Romero to be the permanent cabinet-level secretary of health. And we're very, very pleased and honored that you are willing to accept that responsibility. And I failed to add that part of his national reputation is that he serves not just on the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, but he's actually chair of it. So he's chair of a busy, very important national committee that will help guide the immunization program for the COVID-19 immunization that we all hope for. And then let me move to our cases today. Yesterday we had 45,381 cases. We have an additional 912 cases today. Of these, 158 are in the correctional units. And as you will be able to see in a graph shortly, that means we're fairly flat for community cases. Hospitalizations have declined by 10. We're now at 516 hospitalizations. We've had an additional 18 deaths. That brings it to 508 over the 500 mark. Regretfully so. Our total cases is 46,293 cumulative. And of the new 912 cases, of those, here's the top counties. Chico County with 149. Of course, that is where the Delta unit is. So that's the reason that small county has such a high number. Pulaski County with 79, Sebastian County with 51, Washington County with 42, Mississippi County with 35, Garland County with 29, Craighead County with 28, Saline County with 26, Pope County with 24, Ashley and Crittenden County with 21 each, and Benton County has 20. So that's almost, it'll be interesting when Washington County and Benton County drop out of those top counties that are over 20. Of course, that's sort of a hopeful wish that we will get there in those high population counties. And of course, Pulaski County, we hope, moves down as well. Let's go to the slides to take a look at our new cases. And in here, you'll be able to see that the orange are the community cases. The white is the correctional cases. We don't mention it very much because it's sporadic that we have a large number of cases in our correctional institutions, but over the last 24 hours we did. And so that's the reason for that spike. Other than that, it's flat in terms of our community cases. 7-day rolling average, you can see that as well for the trend line. The number of active cases, we're not at the peak in terms of active cases. I hope that stays that way. Right now it's about 7,000 going, and this is the hospitalized patients, and that goes up and down day by day, just depending upon the condition of the patients. That's down for today. And this is the 7-day rolling average of percent positive tests in Arkansas. And as someone pointed out rightfully, there's always seems to be a dip toward the end. Well, that dip toward the end is a little bit misleading because in subsequent days, we're going to have new information on those tests comes in that backfills that and will actually flatten out that dip on the end. So that remains to be seen, but I wanted to be able to explain why that is the case. Go back to the other one again for a second. And of course, we are right at the 10% positive. Yeah, that's a seven-day rolling average. You can see we're actually too high on that. I hope that does come down. And then the test results, and here again you can see the challenge we face. Department of Health did moderately well in the white, but the red, we had a slower day in terms of the public labs, the commercial labs, and that's one of the reasons that our testing over the last 24 hours is 5,077 total tests over the last 24 hours. And then let me talk a little bit about the UAMS modeling. And I'm putting this out there because it shows what could happen and what we want to make sure doesn't happen. And that depends upon our behavior. It depends upon our wearing masks and our social distancing, continuing to take this seriously. And the UAMS model in terms of cases projects 55,000 total cases by August 10th, which is not that far away. And that's where the white line would be if we followed that model. The model that we want to follow has to be less than that, and we'll be able to measure ourselves over the next few days from that. The UAMS model also projected by August 15th, 3,686 cumulative hospitalizations and 543 deaths. And so that's is something we're going to have to watch. And, of course, the modeling in that close term is what they're providing us now. I think in a couple weeks they might provide us with some longer-term projections. And I look at those projections and I say, let's see what we can do to beat those projections and make sure that doesn't become the reality on the ground. For all of those that are interested in band and choir, that's important to so many of our students. And the Department of Health has put up on their website the new directives and guidelines for school-sponsored music, band, and choir. And obviously this is a risk area, and so the guidelines provide a number of different protective measures in order to protect the students and those that are around and the staff as well. But this gives them an opportunity to mitigate, to work through this, but also to be able to share the music that they enjoy and love. Secondly, I want to talk about prisons for a second. And I'm pleased to announce today that we have set about the plan to test 100% of the inmates in state custody through our state prison facilities. And currently we have 19 state prison facilities. At this point, 10 have already been fully tested. All the inmates in 10 of the facilities have been tested, including the Delta unit, and that's one of the reasons that we discovered additional positive cases there through we call it mass testing, but it is 100% testing of the inmates in those facilities. So we have 9 more to do. Our goal is to have 100% of our inmates tested by the end of this month. And as part of that, I've authorized 10 National Guard personnel to be able to assist in the, as medical clinicians, to assist in the taking of the samples from the inmates to make sure we can meet this goal. That was a request by Secretary Graves that we provide that assistance, and we thank the National Guard for making those resources available so that we can take that action in our state prisons. With that, let me invite Dr. Romero for his comments, and then we're going to have Secretary Key will make an additional announcement today.
Thank you, Governor. So before I begin with the numbers, let me thank the Governor for this appointment. I realize it's a significant honor, and I greatly thank him for the privilege of serving the public here in Arkansas. I will be a tough act to follow. Will be for Dr. Nate Smith, and we have a very illustrious number of secretaries of health that have served in this position in the past. So I will strive to meet that expectation. So let me go forward then with the numbers, additionals. Hospitalized patients, we have 10 less than yesterday at 516. Individuals on a ventilator has increased to 106. The total number of recovered Arkansans is 38,848. Active cases, 6,937, with 88 cases in nursing facilities, 513 cases in correctional facilities, and 6,336 community cases. The governor has mentioned that we tested 5,077 specimens yesterday. 1,509 came from your Arkansas Department of Health Public Laboratory. Commercial private laboratories, 3,105, and UAMS, 406. And that rounds off the numbers for today. Thank you.
So today we're announcing a new call center resource. This is Ready for School Resource Call Center. This was actually established this week. It opened on Monday. And the purpose of this call center is to provide a readily accessible, phone accessible resource for parents, teachers to be able to call if they have questions. We will take this opportunity to either get the resources they need or direct them to the right place. This is something very important as we get closer to the start of school, that parents are going to have more questions. Obviously, many of those questions will be dependent upon the work that's happening in their local school districts, but we will work to make sure that we get those answers for them. It's also important that we provide this resource to all Arkansans, and that's why I'm very proud of the partnerships that we have here. We are partnering in this endeavor with UAMS, with the Arkansas Department of Health, with Arkansas Children's Hospital, the Republic of the Marshall Islands Consulate, the Arkansas Bilingual Bicultural Education Support Network, and the Office of Coordinated Support and Service. This call center will be open currently from 8 to 4, Monday through Friday. The number is 833-353-6050, 833-353-6050. And obviously, we will gauge the level of response we get, and if we need to look at expanding the hours of that call center operation, we will be doing so as well. But really want to express my appreciation to the partners in this endeavor as we seek to continue to get information out to our parents.
Thank you, Johnny, and I ask Dr. Greg Bledsoe, our Surgeon General, to chair the advisory group on high school sports. They have met. He just came for a meeting from there. Just wanted him to give a brief report.
Thanks, Governor. The committee to look at reopening high school sports has met twice now, once on Monday morning and then once this morning. I just came from that meeting, and I've been very pleased. It's been a very robust discussion. If you look at the number of people who are on that committee, it's a very diverse crowd. It's a group of individuals who are very committed to their communities. They're committed to the student athletes and their leaders in their prospective fields. So we've had a lot of perspective shared and a lot of great discussion. I mean, obviously, we are still in the middle of a pandemic, and our focus is going to be on mitigating the risk of the spread of COVID-19 and making sure that we can have schools open and active when they begin in the fall. But along with that, we also recognize that sports and other extracurricular activities are a big deal. It's not just about fun. It's about students and athletes participating in activities that could open up opportunities for them later, rubbing shoulders with mentors such as coaches and other activity leaders who can have a tremendous impact on their lives. So we recognize these opportunities, and we're committed as a committee to discussing all the different issues so that we can find a safe and effective way of moving forward with some of these extracurricular activities in the near future. So thank you very much.
With that, we'll take any questions.
You have this new resource line, but I'm wondering if you have any new answers for some of the concerns teachers have regarding their health returning to school, or questions of if they need to quarantine, how compensation will be worked out?
In reference to your last question on how compensation is worked out, again, that's handled by the district, but I've asked Secretary Key to return on Friday, and we hope that we'll be able to we're working on additional plans and hopefully have an announcement that might be prepared that would be helpful for our teachers to give them some confidence in the event they have to be isolated. So we're still looking at that, working on that, have some more information down the road. And that's just an example of the process that we're going through. We're listening to teachers. We understand the concerns they have. Secretary Key is working with the local districts in terms of making sure that they have PPE, if there's better quality or new innovation that we can implement or that we can learn. We certainly want to do our best to do that and have our teachers in as safe an environment as they can be. So we're continuing to work through that.
From some of the states that have opened up schools yet, I think we've seen some positive cases pop up after school has started in about three different states. So are there any initial takeaways?
First of all, I think the takeaway is there's not any real surprises that you've had positive cases. You've had some teacher staff in different states have had to be quarantined, or students and they've addressed these issues and they try to move on. It's still early. We've only had, I know Georgia, for example, had, I think it was 300 teachers that had to quarantine, but it's, my goodness, it's such a large school district in Atlanta, so I'm not sure that's a surprise. So we're watching and learning it, but it's just the start of that process. But as we go closer, we will see the experience of more and additional schools and their success rate and the challenges that they face. You know, I've learned from my fellow governors some ideas on PPE as to how we might be able to do it better that we're looking at to see if it's workable here in Arkansas. Secretary Key, feel free if you want to jump in on any of that, if you've got to add. Some of these questions are related. Did you have something?
Thank you, Governor. I think one of the takeaways that I have seen in just the first few days is the resilience of children. You know, one of the things we worry about is will they keep their masks on? And many of the reports that I've seen from states that have had earlier openings like Texas, that seems to be going very well considering what we were concerned about. So we're looking at those information that's coming from these other states, again, looking at practices that might help us do a better job when we get started.
Yes.
After seeing the UAMS predictive model, are you considering any other increased efforts by the state to try to minimize the spread?
No, I didn't see anything startling in the predictive model of UAMS. It was short term. I mean, we can look at the future, and it all depends upon how many cases we have every day. So it wasn't any additional concerns that I had from that predictive model. There's some more things we want to look at, but I think whenever they provide additional modeling in terms of long term, we might learn more at that time from what they're saying.
In terms of the sports, I think there were some types of football practice that started this week. Have you seen any outbreaks associated with that? And are you still planning to issue from the Sports Advisory Committee? Is there going to be some type of written guidelines that are issued, or what's kind of the status of that?
No, the Sports Advisory Group is a advisory group to me as governor to give me their counsel as well as to the Department of Health. And so I've asked for some their guidance and suggestions to me and to Dr. Romero this week so that we can make further decisions in regards to the contact sports as we look into next week and beyond. Sent the signal, obviously, last week that we want to be able to have those engaged and participating, but we needed to have a broader look at it in terms of what are the best practices, do we need to make any adjustments in order to have the best opportunity not only to start a season but to hopefully finish the season. So we expect part information this week, and I've asked them to work for probably 90 days because I'm going to need continued guidance as you go through the season and unexpected items come up. In terms of our experience this week, I'm not aware of any issues that have developed. Of course, this is Wednesday, and they have moved to helmets. And then I think today maybe shoulder pads as well, helmets and shoulder pads. And so, I didn't expect anything dramatic from that exchange because they've been practicing together as a team. They've just added a little bit more padding and helmet to it. This is a start this week. Obviously, if we continue, which I expect that we will, next week will be more contact drills, and that is a little bit more challenging, but you're still working with the same team.
There's a concern about allowing football to get into contact that it presents sort of, we're kind of more back to normal to the general public.
Absolutely. It's the same way of lifting some of the restrictions on restaurants and gyms that just because those restrictions are lifted, it doesn't mean we're back to normal. And we try to emphasize that wherever we are in this pandemic, we need everybody to wear their masks, to take it seriously, to social distancing, and you can't let up in that effort. And that's particularly important as we look at school sports. That's not a sign that we're through the pandemic. Everybody knows that in terms of the rate of positivity that we have, the number of cases that we have. But the reality is if these students are not at school, they're going to be doing something else. If they're not engaged in sports or band, they're going to be doing something else that could be just as risky behavior in terms of the virus. And so we're trying to put them in a better environment that can have proper guidelines and adult supervision, gives them that structure. Still risky, but you've got to mitigate that risk. Are there any questions from our remote locations?
Yes, Governor. This is Andrew with AP
Springs.
I think you're on mute. I can't hear you anyway.
I'm sorry, sir. I saw an article from the National Governors Association that some of the governors back east have formed, I guess, a compact or a co-op for cooperative purchasing of things
table?
Like
yes,
testing
Alex.
Gear.
The answer is yes, and the answer is from the experience that our medical professionals have observed nationally in other states that if we all mitigate, if we all wear our mask, if we socially distance, then that's exactly what brings the case numbers down and brings the positivity rate down because the virus can die, can reduce its impact. Now, that is all dependent upon individual behavior. And if you can have all the guidelines you want and you can have all the mandates you can put your pen to, but if people are not taking responsibility, then you'll see the case, you won't see much difference in the next couple of weeks. And so I think everybody wants to pull together. That's what we're trying to do, is to pull together to make sure we can be successful.
AMS modeling, is there anything that they've got that sort of projects active cases? Because I know when you see the cumulative, it's kind of an ominous looking number, but I think as we all come to learn that just because we're at 40-odd thousand doesn't mean we're at 40-odd thousand active cases.
Oh, absolutely. I didn't see that reference of active cases in their modeling, but that's a key ingredient. The cumulative cases just really tells you what new cases that you're having, which is informative. But we want to take a little deeper dive into that. We might have some more comments on that modeling as we continue to have the opportunity to compare it with real data and see what we can learn from that. Now, are we online? Is there any other?
Governor, this is Andrew with AP. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Andrew.
I want to ask you and the Secretary Key about the instructions that went out to districts today regarding on-site instruction and the requirement that schools have to be open to students, my understanding is five days a week. And wanted to see what is that instruction, what does that mean for districts that were planning an alternate schedule or blended schedule? And I guess why send out this instruction this close to the start of school? And also wanted to see if you or Secretary Key had a comment on Education Association, a state education association, asking for a suspension of standardized testing.
I'll let you take the first whack at that.
Thanks, Andrew. And the answer is, really, this is not a change in our stance at all. Since March, when the governor made the announcement and we made that very difficult decision to close schools for on-site instruction, we have said since day one the plan for the fall of this school year is to come back and have school on-site. So we had been made aware that some districts were making plans that were fewer than 5 days, and we felt like that the clarification was needed today to make sure that districts understood. We do have a state responsibility. We have given flexibility for districts to offer virtual options, blended options, and on-site options, and parents need that, students need that. So we just clarified the stance that we believe has been our stance all along and certainly reflects the stance of the governor. Regarding the AEA request, we did receive that request, but the testing requirement is a federal requirement. That was waived by the federal government, by the U.S. Department of Education in the spring. At this point, they have not issued any waivers for that. And as a matter of fact, right now, they are not considering waivers for the mandated testing. So in Arkansas, we intend to proceed and follow the law. If we don't, then it puts federal dollars at risk, and that's not good for our students.
Let me just add on the testing that as governor, as someone interested in the education of the state, the testing is very, very important. And you say, well, they might not do that well because you were out last year. We've got a blended environment this year. And the answer is we need to know. We need to know the consequence of COVID-19 on our educational system and the progress that students are making. And so, to me, it's an important measuring stick. Obviously, you got to look at it from a health standpoint as well, but Secretary Key answered that well, but I wanted to add that I do think it's important. Next question.
Dr. Romero, page 43 of 4029. In a Q&A with school superintendents, you said that it would be the health department's call to close a school if a district experiences a spike in cases or there's an outbreak. Has the health department created metrics for determining a closure, and how would you work with school superintendents to make these decisions?
So there are no metrics that have yet determined for closure of school, and it still is the decision of the superintendent to close a school. We will be available to assist in discussions in reaching that decision, but the ultimate decision still lies with the superintendent.
Did I misspeak? I don't think it's right.
I misspoke then. I'm sorry. Forgive me.
You've been working on that, Secretary Key.
Yeah. Yeah, just to make sure we're clear on that. We have set up a system of response levels, and those response levels do give flexibility to the local superintendents to make just certain decisions, but those response levels have to be discussed in conjunction with the health department and with the Department of Education. So the superintendents are certainly in a position to give us the best their best estimate of the situation and how it's impacting their district in case there is some type of outbreak. But if we refer to that response level document, that's the document, that's the guide that we go by. And when you think about school closures like we have talked about in the spring, that's something we want to avoid. And so using this response level document, we feel like we can minimize, one, we have to mitigate the risk, and two, we have to minimize that disruption to students.
Thank you.
Dr. Romero, this is Josh Briggs with the Saline Courier here in Benton, and I have two questions for you. Since you spoke a couple of weeks ago about how children are not really spreaders of the COVID-19 virus, a number of studies have emerged in the last week that say younger children, 0 to 5 and slightly older, have 10 to 100 times the RNA for the virus in their noses and should be considered as spreaders. Have you received or read anything that would consider backtracking on your statement that says children are now in fact spreaders?
So the article you're referring to is a letter in the Journal of American Medical Association Pediatrics. That particular letter spoke to the levels of virus found in these children that are 5 years in particular and younger. That study did not show that they spread it more. They have more virus. Studies to date still indicate that if you're under 10, you don't seem to spread it as much. Now, will that change? It's very possible. As I've said before from this podium, this is a moving and a very fluid subject right now. We are learning more as we study children. I don't think I'm going to have to backtrack. I think what we're going to have to do is simply modify the statement based on newer information, and that's what science and medicine is. It's based on the current level of knowledge, and we're learning more every day.
Thank you. My second question was dealing with hospitals and the amount of money that they get when, you know, for treating COVID patients. We get a number of messages and comments daily saying that they believe hospitals are upping their numbers and admitting people for, quote, COVID-19 when they're not actually COVID-19 patients. Can you speak to that and kind of clarify that situation for the state on how that money works and what hospitals are doing out there?
I think, first of all, I meet regularly with the hospitals. I think they've acted extraordinarily well in terms of treating COVID patients. And we recognize there's additional costs for treating a COVID patient versus a non-COVID patient. And so we're working with them regularly in terms of the making sure the finances are handled appropriately. If there's more information we need to dig into, we'll take a look at it, but I'm not aware of any issue that you're raising there. Any other questions?
Yes, Governor, good afternoon. It's Neil Gladner in Hot Springs. I saw an article where some of the governors in the East have formed a compact or a co-op sort of an arrangement for purchasing among several states combined. Is there any discussion of that here in the South?
Well, actually, that opportunity was made available to any state to participate, so it's not geographically restricted. And I have read the proposal. I think it is goes exactly the direction that I have advocated. It just takes the state leadership role a step further. So I have indicated that I am interested in it. Arkansas is interested in it. It might be something that's helpful. I'd like to get a few more details on it. And for those who haven't followed it, this is it would be a consortium of states to magnify the purchasing power for antigen testing, particularly point of care testing, and to make sure that the states can help protect that supply chain. We've pushed at it from a national standpoint, but if the states can add to that equation and give confidence to the manufacturers that there is going to be a steady demand for that from the states that they can rely upon, that they can obtain finances on, then that might be a positive. So we're leaning forward on that and looking at it further.
Some of the sticking points that you guys have discussed in bringing football back to full competition. That could be you or Dr. Bledsoe.
Well, I'll start with it, Dr. Bledsoe, and you can add to it. But first of all, you look at the length of contact between the players, and you measure that length of contact. And protect the players off the field in terms of whenever they are waiting to go in, that minimizes the spread there. If you're looking at the contact side of it, you try to measure how long they're exposed and whether they have shields on, which is more expensive for some of the local school districts. So a lot of factors in there. And there's a differentiation as to what can be done sometimes in the larger school districts with more resources versus smaller school districts. So a lot of issues there. And obviously one of them being that if you have students as positive that knocks out a couple players, do you play on Friday, which you should, but at what point do you not able to play on Friday, or the other team doesn't want to play in the event that there's a positive test? So a lot of myriad of issues there that this committee's got to work through, not just now, but even longer.
No, the governor's absolutely right. It's been a really interesting discussion because in this committee, it's not just physicians. It's also coaches and administrators and people who are working with the kids and very committed to their safety. I mean, obviously, the biggest sticking point is we're in the middle of a global pandemic, and we're trying to limit the spread of a virus that's a very serious thing. But when we look at the individual teams at an individual high school, the argument in favor of opening this up a little bit is that these students are already a cohort. They've been interacting. They're going to continue to interact in the school. We're trying to limit things as much as possible. But this is the next step that we would be looking at seriously would just be allowing a little bit more opening up amongst a group of people who are already associating quite frequently. And so that's a lot of the discussion that we've had this week, and it's been a really robust and thorough discussion about those topics.
Is there a final question right here at the table?
Some districts that have been talking about like an alternating schedule, school districts. What would be the consequence if a district goes ahead and goes forward with that plan of just having a couple days a week of in-person instruction?
A couple days a week online and a couple days a week that would be done in classroom instruction. And I'm going to let, obviously, Secretary Key address that too, but the first thing is that it makes it very, very difficult for working parents to have, how do you go to work if you're two days the kids are home learning virtual, because that has to have some parental supervision. And so if they're learning virtual, particularly the younger grades and even the higher grades, you don't leave them there at the house alone. They have to have some supervision there. And so it really impacts the workflow. And that's what I've heard from the parents are concerned about that type of schedule. Johnny?
I think we can't continue to think of it in the premise of pre-COVID education. You asked about what the consequence is. The consequence is really to the students. The consequence is to the impact that they've had since March of being outside of the school building. We are working to build the capacity for virtual learning, but we know that some students are going to do better on-site, in-person, and the school setting can be managed differently. We're not saying you have to have the same type of traditional classroom experience, but you have to have relevant learning experiences for those students when they come to your doors, and you need to have your doors open. So that's where we're going to be working with the school districts that may be concerned about it, are looking at alternative measures, but how can they engage those students on a regular basis inside the walls of their school building?
If the district does basically disregard, you know, your what would the state do about it?
And that's something we hope we don't have to explore. But we have an obligation under the Arkansas Constitution. It's very clear, and it's been clarified by the courts a number of occasions, that the state has a responsibility, and the state works best when we're working collaboratively. So we would prefer not to have to worry about what the consequences to a school district is. We want to work collaboratively with the local district to make sure that those opportunities are available for their students.
Thank you for your attention today, and tomorrow we'll let you know of the plans. I'll actually be in Washington, D.C. for the Council of Governors meeting, which I actually chair, and be back on Friday. Thank you all very much.